que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021.
So today's show, the Bathrop Spears Broadside Show coming up shortly, is going to be a flashback almost entirely, all the way back to October 21st, 1999. It was a lengthy and tumultuous Huff meeting today. Although one of the better meetings, I would say, at least that's what some of the Huff members said, in spite of a lot of conflict, different disagreement, and yet a lot of also mutual support. It was quite a mix. Probably more about that and the outcome of the meeting on Sunday. But first, our theme song.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And on Sunday, we also hope to be following up on the Mountain Community Resource Center behavior toward those few homeless folks who make their way to the center's overhang at night and try to shelter themselves from the rain and wind and have been confronted with threats as a consequence. At least that's been the partial response. Not in the last few days, which seemed to give some hope, but we're going to find out there apparently it's a little unclear. The sheriffs reportedly came down today, Thursday, the 26th of January, and they told Everett, the individual I spoke with a few hours ago, that he either had to move all of his stuff, his tent, his dog, his mat, or be arrested for trespass and have his property confiscated, and he predicted his dog taken to the pound. So I'm going to try to get a hold of him right now and see if I can get an update, because the sheriff said he would be back in an hour, and I want to see if that actually happened. So, unfortunately, I couldn't get through to Everett or to Helga, who he occasionally communicates with regularly, actually. He and Eric are both regularly in touch with Helga of Felton. I'm going to hope to have more information about this on the Sunday show, and we are, in fact, planning a response. We voted for a response today at the Huff meeting. If the Mountain Community Resource Center continues harassing the folks there without any kind of appreciation of their situation and their need for some elementary, not luxury shelter, but just not driving them away and calling the police when the mountain Resource Center is claiming to be resourceful and resource-focused for the community. And, of course, the homeless folks there are a part of the community. But what you're going to be hearing now is a flashback to October 21st, 1999. As I mentioned before, what it covers is a number of items. There's the issue of youth counselor Jerry Henry, sort of a hippie-esque kind of guy, I would call him, who would counsel youth and sort of assist them. He was both a figure in Santa Cruz, and I also ran into him at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, when it was actually still a shopping center, not just sort of a large Safeway complex. Hadn't been taken over by corporate interests entirely, which drove out most of the small businesses in the last decade. But he was being pursued by the sheriff's department for insisting on his right to be in a public space in the shopping center area and chat with young people there, and also protest the behaviors of some of the stores. And you're going to be hearing about that. Then you're going to be hearing Aaron Birch and his colleague, who are white separatists, some would call them Nazis, who ultimately Aaron was convicted of assaulting one or more homeless guys. And he also had a dispute with protesters who were supporting Amumia Abu-Jamal, the African-American activist convicted, wrongly many feel, of murder in Philadelphia in a rigged trial. And there was also a death penalty decision about that time in 1999, which prompted protest. And there were protesters where Birch and others were kind of engaging in debate, and I recorded a lot of it. You also get to hear discussion of violence against the homeless at that time. There was another situation that was happening. The Santa Cruz Five trial was beginning. Those are the five individuals arrested in largely peaceful demonstrations against Bill Clinton. That's the Führer Bill, you know, the president of the United States' bombing of the Serbians in the spring of 1999. And there was police repression of a protest that happened there. And Vinnie Lombardo, who is also Free Radio Santa Cruz's V-man, both a savvy technical supporter and a commentator, he faced, along with four others, trial. I guess Steve Argue was a part of that group as well. There's a lot of discussion about that. You're going to hear an interview with Patches. Patches was a homeless woman who writes about the trials and tribulations of trying to get health care. It was a pretty horrible scene. Reverend John Phillips' Rainbow Cross walk to San Francisco on behalf of diversity. And a report from activist Becky Johnson. I used to call her Beggarbacker Becky, who was also a member of the Homeless Service Center at that time. It was a newly formed group that had evolved out of the Homeless Community Resource Center and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And there was a concern about violence, protection from violence against the homeless. So that's what you're going to be hearing at the October 21st, 1999 flashback. And here it is. Oh, a caution. The musical portions are somewhat distorted, so you may want to turn them down a bit when they come up. And there are some uneven voice levels for the interviews, too, although they're generally pretty good, pretty clear. I think they're historically interesting, and I'm now going to play them.
96.FM.
Who's a Nazi? We'll find out from his own mouth what he's been up to. He has been convicted of assault, and we have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Can't hear you.
Can't hear me.
You need to be up a little more on the mic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you imagine? We have those loyal listeners calling in, letting us know that my voice is not as strong as it used to be, or this equipment is falling apart. I'm not sure what. Whatever. But this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and if you still can't hear me out there, please give us a call at 427-3772. That's our studio line. It's open. If it's busy, it means you just got to keep trying, and eventually you'll get through. We only have one line, and we really encourage dialogue because this is your community radio station, and hopefully you are the community. So make it your radio station, 427-3772. And we're going to be doing a lot of stuff tonight. As I said, there's some potential interviews with, there's going to be a kind of a follow-up on the Jerry Henry case. You may remember Jerry Henry is a street minister out in Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center who has been particularly targeted by deputies and some businesses out there, specifically Gottschalk's and the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, and I guess Rancho Liquors are the three that stand out. He has essentially been found guilty of nothing. They brought him to, they brought him in on charges on a number of occasions, the charges being such obscure code sections as interfering with a business, trespass to interfere with a business, public nuisance, resisting arrest were some of the more recent ones, but they have never found him guilty of anything. But their main objective, they being the merchants and the deputies, is to get him out of there because of his self-chosen profession, a mission, you might say, of informing young people of their rights, young people who apparently the Rancho Del Mar authorities would prefer, like some authorities in Santa Cruz, prefer to see homeless and activists on the mall gone. And that's what's going on out there. We're going to be looking at that situation because the judge who issued a $100,000 bail on Jerry Henry last week, Judge Robert Yance, is at this very moment at a meeting at the Homeless Services Center, which is out at Coral Street, 115 Coral Street. They are having their monthly board of directors meeting. This is the group that where all the charitable folks get together on the board of directors and sort of do their charity stint. And that is what Judge Yance is doing, as well as certain other merchants and police officers who belong to this board, and plain old community members and Samaritans, but mostly they're not plain and old, or maybe they're older, but they're certainly not plain. They're wealthier than most of us. And Judge Yance apparently has seen fit to put the highest bail I have ever heard of in this county on an individual for a $1,000 or $2,000 crime, to wit, trespass, in a situation where when I interviewed people out there, and I'm going to be playing some of those interviews later, I hope, if I can dig them out of this sack, there was no act of trespass. It was simply a form of, it's going to be a form of, essentially, either they're going to take the case to trial and drop it as they have in the past, or police are perhaps going to tell stories. Dare I say, perjure themselves? Well, we'll see. But before we get into that, some of the more controversial part of the show is something we're going to cover first, and that is an interview with Aaron Birch. Aaron Birch, as some of you may know, is a local man who has been convicted of assault, assaulting Joe Barker and several other homeless people. Again, I believe he was Barker that he was found guilty of assaulting. He certainly was found guilty of assault after a trial. I wasn't at the trial because the police department did not see fit to inform any of us homeless advocates, when this was happening. And we got sort of conflicting information, so we never made it to the trial. But strangely enough, last Thursday, after the death warrant was signed for Mamia Abu-Jamal and many people took to the streets in an incident largely unreported, the man in question, Aaron Birch, and some of his associates came to the town clock at the end of the march, and they were greeted with kind of dreaded cries of Nazis, here come the Nazis, and there was some fear that there was some physical attack going to be happening, but that's not what happened. What happened instead was a heated conversation that went on for about half an hour to 45 minutes. We played the first half of that conversation in our last show, and that concerned was a man named Jeff, who's one of Aaron Birch's friends, I assume, or associates, who described himself as a National Socialist, I believe, Nazi. That's what the Nazis were. They were described as the National Socialist German Workers' Party. That's where they Nazi is the name, I guess it was a somewhat initially a derogatory name that the British gave them, but that is, I believe, how one of these individuals described himself. Aaron Birch, whether he is a Nazi or not, you can judge for yourself. The question to my mind is, this man's been convicted of a violent crime of assault. There have been an increasing number of assaults against poor and homeless and young people throughout the year, although in the last few weeks I've only heard of, well, I've heard of one up in Davenport, and I haven't gotten a clear report on that lately. And if anyone has a clear report, I invite them to call in. But without further ado, let me play the second part of the interview that happened last Thursday night. Let's see, that would be the 14th, when Aaron Birch gave us this lengthy interview. Actually, before we hear Birch, you're going to hear another voice, that of his colleague Jeff, concluding a conversation, and then we will hear Birch. If you want to call in and comment on this, please give me a call at 427-3772.
What you're saying is that all the black people should stay in, like, where all the black people are, and all the Asian people should stay in Asia where the Asian people are, right? And all the white people should stay where the white people are. Well, this land was stolen from the Native American people. So the Native American people should stay here, and all the Europeans should go back to Europe. So why aren't you in Europe?
You want me to go back to Europe?
Well, that's what you're saying that you think is right. That's your belief. You know? That's your belief is that all the white people should stay where white people are, and white people are in Europe. That's where you came from. And all the black people were from Africa, and all the Asian people were from Asia, and so on and so forth. Yeah. They were stolen by the Europeans. So why aren't you in Europe if this is what you so strongly believe?
I've got a job right now, and I'm going back as soon as I get the chance.
Really? Right on.
Do you have a country you prefer to go to?
I'm planning on Sweden.
Sweden's a cool country.
Sweden, Norway, somewhere.
Yeah, man, that's where I go.
Sweden's fighting like from Romania. Did you know that? It's on France. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So what I want, what I'd like to throw down is that all this racial stuff, that all this racial tension and argument and push and pull.
Okay, what do you think that's saying about
there, so right down the street. What I'm saying is that that's kind of an illusion. It's kind of an illusion that we need to be fighting. Because the real fight needs to be against the real oppressors.
What are the real... Tell me.
Because
people of color
are not oppressing the white people.
Did I ever say they were?
And I'm even saying that you yourself are not oppressing me. Because you're not, like, trying to bash my head in. Right? And I'll never want to bash your head in. So what I'm saying is that if we look around and find out who the real oppressors are, we're going to find out that it's the corporations. And we're going to find out that the reality is this is already not just a police state, not just a government state, but it's already a corporate state, meaning that the corporations are totally in charge and have complete control of all the food, all the clean water.
Misunderstood me again.
Oh, I'm not arguing with anything you said. I'm just throwing out something completely different.
This might be a trip to you, but National Socialism, Nazis, it's not corporate.
I'm not saying that Nazis are corporate.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's what a lot of people go off on.
All these diverse communities together to agree commonly that we want to be separated. And in order for you to do that, that means you have to go and talk to every different race and tell them.
Why don't I leave? I'll tell you why.
That's over.
Just hold on a second. This is what's going to happen. When I get married and I start having children, then I'll leave. But until then, I seek to educate other people. That's all.
Yeah, and in the process of educating other people and you telling them that they should live in a separate life and with their own race, in that same sense, you are going and talking to them with a different race and defeating your whole purpose of what you believe in.
Separation. I'm talking about sexual separation. I'm talking about intermarriage. I'm not talking about interacting, like, in the world.
So you're saying that we should all have white and black families. Everyone keeps their own ethnicity, all all together in the same thing in different houses.
So they can have ethnic pride.
And that's not going to happen, because you know what happens when an African family's next door to a white family?
They have the right to. I'm just trying to educate people.
But listen. When you have an African family next to a white family, you both have kids. That's what you want. You want to have kids, and they're going to be white. And if there's an African family next to you, which you would supposedly be happy with, your kids could fall in love. Like, if you're saying, oh, I want them to be friends, I just want to stay separated. Okay, they can go play and have fun. But you know what, brother? They're going to fall in love. And they are going to go, and they're going to live the rest of their lives with that kind of respect for the other race and fall in love.
Love,
that's what's happened already.
Love is not a feeling. It is a choice. Love is not a feeling. Love is a commitment.
Did you know that by having white people breeding white people, with having black people only breeding black people, like the same group, that the fertility of men has dropped significantly in the past decade because racial mixing is not happening?
Hey, if you could write me some statistics, you know, I will go and look at the Bureau of Statistics. I do that for fun. All right, if you could write something down, I could go look up. I'd love that. I took some of your guys' literature. I'm reading it. I'm checking it out. I'm looking for footnotes. I don't see footnotes and other notes. I don't see things that are telling me to look at other places. I see something you guys printed, and I'd like to see the books, you know? If you guys, I mean, anything would be greatly appreciated.
Aaron, how do you feel about homeless people?
Homeless people? I have no problem with them.
As long as they're not having sex with other races.
Well, I don't have a violent problem with those people. I think it's wrong.
My name is Robert Barrett. What's your name?
I'm Aaron.
Hey, Aaron.
How's it going?
All right. Do you mind if I ask you a somewhat more personal question? You don't have to answer. You've recently been involved in a court case.
Right.
What was that about?
That was about being a transient.
And how did that happen?
We were in a house, and some shit went down that I don't know what happened. I came into the room. I saw my friend and another fellow grappling. My friend is a 16-year-old kid. This other guy appeared to be older and bigger, so I grabbed the other guy, pushed him off my friend, grabbed my friend, and ran out of the building. And then all of a sudden, 5 months later, the police were looking for me. I voluntarily turned myself in. I wanted to get the whole thing cleared up.
Where did this incident happen?
I don't know. Something in the house that way.
And how did it happen that you were in the house?
Some people were drinking. I went to go find my friend because I don't want him drinking because he gets stupid.
So when you found your friend, he was involved with this other person.
Right.
Now, were any of the friends of both of you around, or were you just the two of you, or what was?
There's a whole bunch of people. I don't know. I don't hang out down here. I have no desire to hang out down here because I get in fights. People attack me. I've been jumped. Like 5 or 6 times down here.
By who?
By a bunch of people. Skaters, punkers, everybody. It doesn't matter.
Is this because you think that it's a violent area, or you think you're being targeted?
No, it's because I was stupid when I was younger. I yelled stuff. I was stupid. I ran around and acted like an asshole, and that's coming back to me. And just because it's coming back to me, I'm not going to stoop to their large charge. Thank you. I'm not going to stoop to their level, and I'm not going to react. So I try to stay away from them.
So these are people who knew you from another time?
It's not necessarily people who knew me. It's people who heard things about me. You know, a word of mouth down here is a big thing, and everything gets distorted. It's like playing telephone. Everything gets distorted. I tell you something, you tell this fellow. See, you have a tape recorder. That's a good thing to have because you can distort the truth. This in here is truth.
Do you have any objection to my playing this on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
No, you're very welcome to do that. I'm seeking to educate people.
About what?
About what? About the race issue.
What race issue?
The mixing of the races, the genocide being committed against the white race.
You want a statistic?
Okay.
White people represent 1/10 of the population in the world. What do you think about we take all you white boys and we scatter you out and through the world so that you're equally placed amongst the rest of the people in the world?
Why would you want to do that? Why do you have to pick on white people?
People make most of the shit in this country, that's all.
Oh, gee, that sounds very, very stereotypical, and now you're blaming an entire group of people for something.
What are you blaming anybody for?
I'm blaming personal people for personal actions.
Regardless of their skin color.
Exactly.
Then why is it...
I think it's just as wrong for a white person to to marry a black person than it is for a black person to marry a white person.
I don't think it's wrong for anybody to marry anybody.
This is America. You're entitled to that.
Do you know what happens when you select out a group of animals, such as human beings or dogs or horses, and you breed them exclusively to one another?
Well, somebody else
you
is just giving
happens?
Me that statistic, and she didn't have anything to back
it up. You know
up.
What happens?
See, I don't come out here and spout statistics that I don't have
I'm
paper to back up.
I'm not any statistics.
You just did. You spouted a statistic. You can check the tape, but you said that 1/10 of the world's population is white.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, you asked me a question. Do you know what happens? No, I don't. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the statistics? Do you have the facts?
I know what happens when you breed the same kind of animals.
I can tell you that the world is flat. I don't have anything to back that up. You don't have anything to back up the position you're taking.
Well, if you
care to share some literature or something with me?
If you take thoroughbred horses and raise thoroughbred horses exclusively by mating them to thoroughbred horses exclusively, you know what happens?
Go ahead.
You have a group of horses that have legs that are not strong enough to support their bodies. You know what happens if you take German Shepherd dogs and you breed them exclusively to other German Shepherd dogs?
I'll tell you this again. If you could give me a book on genetics.
Can you read?
I can read.
Do you know where the library is?
Yes, I do.
Go and check it out.
Well, give me a book. I'm not just going to go in and go, excuse me. Well, can you give me the name of the book? Here, I can give you a couple names of books, okay? There's one by Friedrich Nietzsche.
Nietzsche when I was in college. Nietzsche is so down on everything, why would you even bother me?
Because it's education. Knowledge is power. And that's the truth. I educate myself. It's true.
You think so?
I do.
I disagree with it.
You think so?
I said yes twice already. Okay.
That should make you a powerful person.
I believe I am a powerful person. Because I have a voice, and I have facts.
You're an intelligent person?
I certainly do.
So, Aaron, did you have a jury trial, or did you just...
Yeah, I took it to a jury.
And what was... Can you tell me about that trial? How long did it take?
It took 4 days, 4.5 days.
And how many witnesses were involved?
There was one witness who happened to be inebriated at the time of the...
Joe Barker
thing. No, Joe Barker fled and refused to testify because apparently he was under indictment for... possession with intent to sell.
Marijuana.
Right. So I guess he didn't want to have anything to do with the court system at that time.
Did you have any conversations with Joe prior? You were held in custody and then you were over.
Yeah, you want to hear what's funny? Okay. Me and Joe Barker were in a holding cell together in the tombs underneath the court building. Neither of us recognized the other one. Because, no, we'd never met before, and no, it wasn't a premeditated thing, and by all witness accounts, the whole scuffle lasted only about 12 to 15 seconds.
And you're listening to a conversation with Aaron Birch, convicted of an assault. And I believe that the man who was assaulted in that assault, and I guess there were a number of people doing the assaulting, and Birch was only one of them, but I believe Birch was convicted of assaulting Joe Barker. And you're hearing his response to the charges and his discussion of the trial, as well as, of course, his own philosophy, self-proclaimed racism, the belief that people of different skin colors should only intermarry with each other to preserve racial purity. I believe that's, of course, faulty in terms of the arguments he's making, a bad social policy, and it has a particularly odious history, this doctrine. But that's not really my concern, that particular issue. My concern here is considering the interests of homeless people and the climate of violence against them, and trying to sound out Aaron on what was going on in that particular assault. What I have heard in the past from Joe Barker is, and Barker told me that it was Aaron Birch who hit him, even though he declined to identify him in court, and he felt that the matter was pretty much resolved. He tried to talk to him privately about it, that he had forgiven him for it. but he still felt it was Birch. And apparently there was sufficient evidence to convict him, although we didn't get into the details of that, and hopefully that will happen at a future time. He's also going to be sentenced in the weeks ahead, and I believe his sentencing hearing is in early November, for those of you who are interested. And if you want to follow this case in more detail, you can call 423-HUFF, by the way. That's the phone line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF. And if you want to get in on any of the conversation in that, well, if you have any thoughts on what you're hearing throughout this show, this is a two-hour show from 6 to 8 on Free Radio, 96.3 FM, you can give us a call at 427-3772. And we resume this tape here now, which talks about, again, it's a tape of Aaron Birch talking to me about a week ago. The issue, his trial for assaulting Joe Barker.
I know what it means to me.
So, the Barker was in the room when you went and
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'd never seen the guy before I saw him in the courtroom. I didn't recognize him from anywhere. I didn't know what he was in there for. And then all of a sudden, I'm in a courtroom. He's pulled out into the courtroom. And he's asked if he recognizes anybody in the courtroom. He says no. And I turn to my lawyer and I'm all, is this the victim? I've never seen the guy before in my life. Had no contact with him before.
So, you were arrested when?
Oh, shit. I don't know the exact date. I can look on my papers. I can't even guess that.
April, March, June. I think it was in May or June.
Okay, yeah, I recall from the newspaper. It was like 4 months after the thing happened.
How long were you held in jail?
Almost 40 days, and then my parents posted a $35,000 bail.
Did it take that long to negotiate it, or did you not want them to post
no,
bail?
At first I thought it was a misconception. I thought that they'd cleared up and realized that nothing really happened. At the time, I didn't want my parents to have to put a lien on their house. I didn't want that for my family. My parents don't agree with my politics. My parents love me, I love my parents, and they chose to put a lien on their house so that I could be out of jail, so I could be with my family.
So the trial concluded when? Remember, was it a week ago or so?
It was like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
And you had a four-day trial.
Right.
And you were charged with simple assault?
No, I was charged with felony assault with a deadly weapon.
The weapon being,
I'm not sure. They were thinking about various objects. Maybe a bottle, maybe a stick, maybe a pipe. They were just trying to place something in my hands so that they could charge me with a deadly weapon.
And was that the only charge?
Yeah.
And what were you convicted of?
I was convicted of simple assault.
And what kind of a penalty did you? Have you been sentenced?
I haven't been sentenced yet, so I haven't.
What do you face? What kind of a penalty?
The maximum sentence for that, I believe, is 9 months.
And have you had any prior history of? Have you been charged or convicted with a previous crime?
No, I haven't been convicted of any other crimes.
Have you been charged with any crimes of violence prior to this?
No.
And you said that in your youth you got into some trouble, but
in my youth I was stupid. Youth is truly wasted on the young, because I didn't appreciate it. I did foolish things. I started to wise up.
It sounds like I'm talking to you as a politician here, but are you talking about like violent foolish things or other foolish things?
I'm talking about foolishness as in not caring. I didn't care what the consequences were. I didn't care what happened. All of a sudden, I woke up one day and I realized that I was going to do something stupid and I was going to get in trouble for it. I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to put, one, the person who I was going to get in trouble with, myself, my family, my friends. I didn't want to tie up our court systems. There's no reason to be stupid.
How have the police been treating you?
They were courteous to me. They did their job, and their job was to put me in jail. I didn't appreciate that, but they did their job.
Do you believe the police discriminated against you because of your political views?
I believe that the court system discriminated against me because of my political views.
And how did this discrimination manifest itself?
Well, let's see. They offered me a plea bargain of 5 years in a state penitentiary. They offered another fellow in K unit, which is the unit I was in, 6 months for the same charge, and they had four witnesses against the guy.
What do you face in terms of a maximum sentence?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
For simple assault?
Yeah, I know it's county time. That could be up to 12 months.
So
I'm guaranteed no state prison.
Okay.
And the difference between simple assault is whether there was no, the jury just came back with a separate verdict?
Right, okay. Simple assault is anything from me touching you to me hitting you with force less, with force less than likely to cause any damage such as broken bone, bleeding, bruises, contusions, that kind of stuff. So the jury said that I didn't use force that was great enough to cause any bodily harm.
What kind of force did you use, candidly?
Huh?
What kind of force did you
use? I'm not sure I should talk about, like, the exact kind of stuff.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel that you used force in the fashion of a judicious police officer, or that possibly you may have gotten involved in the emotions of the moment?
I believe that I used enough force to get this person I didn't know off of my friend.
What was the name of the person, you know, that you got off your friend?
I don't know.
Is it called Ron, perhaps?
I honestly have no idea. I don't know any other name than Joe Barker. I don't know any other faces besides his face because they dragged him out into a courtroom in front of me.
But you didn't see him in the...
I mean, this fellow here could be one of the guys. I don't know. I never seen the guys before. I didn't see them there, and I haven't seen them since, as far as I know.
Now, the room you... Did this all happen in? What did it look like? How big was it?
Oh, it was a small room.
And how many people were in it that you saw?
Oh, there was, like, I think about... I honestly can't say. It was really dark. All I know is I bumped into somebody laying on the ground. I looked down and saw more than one people laying on the ground, and there was about three people standing up in the room, three or four people standing up.
Did you recognize any of the people in the room?
No.
Your friend was in the room, you said?
Right. At first, I didn't recognize him. Getting closer to see what the scuffle was, I did recognize him.
And the name of your friend was?
I'm not going to say that either.
Was he accused of anything?
He was.
And are charges being preferred against him?
I don't know what's going on in that case.
Even though he is a friend of yours.
Even though he's a friend, we still aren't stupid and we don't discuss our cases with each other.
The reason I'm asking these questions is because there's been some concern about violence against homeless people. And you're familiar with the history of Santa Cruz, probably.
Mm-hmm. I lived here all my life.
The Code Blue situation back in the early 80s.
I don't know what the Code Blue was.
Code Blue is the phrase police officers used to, in essence, say, we're beating up a homeless person, come join in. And five officers were tried on this charge. They were acquitted, but they were fired from the police department when there was sufficient evidence raised to rouse doubts as to their suitability to be police officers.
And are we going to blame an entire group of people for that action? Are we going to blame the Santa Cruz Police Department, or are we going to blame those individuals who acted on that?
Well, those who facilitated that behavior, sure.
Okay. I believe in blaming personal people for personal actions, and that's it.
But the question here is, this was a series of systematic attacks against homeless people. And some people see this happening in this city and county and have since early January. What's your view? Do you believe that homeless people are under attack systematically?
I know that I've been under attack by people.
Have you been homeless yourself?
I have. Several of my friends have been homeless. I have nothing against homeless people.
Would you feel that people discriminated against you because you were homeless?
No.
Okay. So you don't feel that you were victimized for being homeless?
No, I don't.
You feel that this is true of your average homeless person?
Well, I believe that you are victimized by the way you carry yourself. Even though I was homeless, I still had pride. I still had dignity. I carried myself with both of those. You have other people that are shuffling around. Somebody might see them and go, you know what? It's not because they're homeless, but it's because they look like they lack either pride or they lack the will to defend themselves. And yes, weak people will target weak people.
Now,
I just want to say I've heard you a lot, and I think you've come a long way. Obviously, you said you have. So just keep going that way, you know, and we'll all live peacefully somehow.
No, I believe in educating the masses.
Education is key.
I believe in...
So, your political views took a shift away from your families at some point?
Yes.
How many years ago was that?
I became interested as just an ignorant child when I seen newsreels in school of Nazi stormtroopers marching. I saw power, dignity, and pride in those faces. I saw people who loved their country and were willing to die for what they believed in.
Now, when did you feel your views took on a... You're calling yourself a national
I'm a
socialist?
Nationalist. I'm not a national socialist. Nationalist.
What's the distinction between them?
I don't believe in socialism in any form.
Uh-huh. So you're a nationalist, so would you then take issue with the philosophy that folks who were running Germany had in the 30s?
No, actually, I actually supported the more the SA, the actual stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. People usually call...
And don't go away. The tape is turning over. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Aaron Birch talking about his Nazi philosophy and the assault on Joe Barker. Stay tuned and call in, 427-3772. Tape should be turning over, but let's turn it over, shall we? See if we can get rolling on that. This is Bathurst Spears Broadsides.
They were trying to reinstate the Prussian Empire at the beginning when they took over at first. I'd be all for that.
Let's see. They call themselves National Socialists, not just Nationalists.
Right.
So
because there was socialism involved. And yes, I disagree with that. I'm a capitalist.
So you take a somewhat different perspective.
Right.
But you do have... You wouldn't then call yourself a Nazi?
No. Other people call me a Nazi. You know, they can call me whatever they want. It doesn't bother me.
How do you describe yourself as a nationalist?
As a nationalist, I believe, first, my nation. Well, me personally, I believe first my God, then I believe my nation. I believe my race is my nation. So if my nation is under attack, then I'll defend it. I believe that there is a systematic attack on my nation by the media, by Hollywood, by all the media, basically. The media in every form.
So... You probably heard Jeff's discussion, or maybe you heard it. He's having a discussion with other folks over there.
I'm trying hard to concentrate on our conversation.
No, and I'm glad you are. He describes himself as a national socialist, which is a different position than yours.
Yes, that's correct. It doesn't stop me from being friends with him.
Of course. We can have friends with many different people. You've been victimized... Even though you're not a victim, but you've been, should we say, targeted
right.
for violence on different occasions. How many times would you say you've been assaulted since January?
Since January this year?
Yes.
I can remember two instances clearly. One, I was walking by myself on the levee over to my friend's house who lives on Broadway, and I was assaulted by five Hispanics.
And did they say anything as they did this?
Yeah, they said, fuck you, give us your money.
So was it a robbery assault sort of thing?
Well, at first it was that, and then they started talking shit, and so I stood there, I just took it, you know? I'm not a victim. A victim lets themselves be a victim. I didn't go call the police. I just said, hey, if I see these guys, I'll fight them.
When was this? What month?
This was in early February.
And were you injured
early
as a consequence
February.
Of this fight?
Yeah, actually, I had my head split open. They hit me with a rock, one of those big cement rocks down there. I was struck in the head with a cement rock. And then it was funny because then they tried to kick me with Tevas sandals, and those don't do much damage.
Tevas sandals?
Yeah, so it was kind of funny. You know, kicking me in the ribs after they knocked me on the ground. And so I just kind of laughed at them, picked myself back up, and then when I picked myself back up, they're all, oh, shit, he can fight back. Let's leave.
So they left once you got up?
Right.
And then you got some hospital treatment?
No, I went to my friend's house. I held an ice pack against my head, and I didn't go to sleep.
And you've recovered since then?
Yeah.
The second assault involved what?
The second assault involved, we were walking down here, and a girl we were with got in a disagreement with another girl who was white, and the other girl went and got a bunch of friends. They came back, and it just turned into this mass, like, fracas. And it was about four of me and my friends, so there was about five of us all together against 12 to 15 other people.
This was just a...
a concept that had nothing to do with race in any way?
No. One of the one white girl called another white girl a white bitch and slapped her, and then the other one came back and said something, and then they started getting in a fight, you know. And then
did you know both these people?
No.
You knew neither of them?
No, I knew one of them.
You knew one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got, you tried to separate them, or you just?
No, I said, hey, knock it off. What are you guys doing? You guys are stupid. The cops are going to roll up. We're all going to get busted.
And somebody assaulted you after that.
And the girl that had originally called the other girl a white bitch went and got a couple of her friends, and then their friends got their brothers, and so there's probably about 5 white guys that were fighting us, and the rest, like 10, 11 people, were black people.
And was race involved? Was it a matter of affiliation of different friendships? Of different...
At that point, it became a race issue with them. They started yelling things about slavery and issues like that, stuff that we had no control over. Committed 400 years before we were born.
So what happened? Did you suffer injuries as a consequence of this?
I had my nose split and a lip split. I had this tooth cracked with a 40 bottle. And again, I didn't go to the hospital. I don't go to the hospital.
And when was this?
Oh, shit. This was about... I think that was about April.
Any questions you want to ask of me or anything you want to say?
I just want to say that everybody deserves an equal opportunity to express themselves and express their views, as long as you don't take it to violence. I think that everybody should be able to propagate what they believe.
So, in terms of your own aggressive behavior, and it's probably something you can't answer candidly because you're under threat of a sentencing by a court, and so it's a question I probably best advised to ask you at another time, but if I were to ask you how many people you have had physical conflict with in the last few years...
Yeah, you're right.
You can't ask that question reasonably given your court situation. But of course, it is a concern because
I can say this: I don't believe in violence. I will not be committing any violent acts. I will defend myself if somebody attacks me.
So you can honestly say you have not attacked anyone yourself in the last several years.
You might
just prefer to remain mute on that issue.
No, I'll tell you this. I'm concerned with the fact that I am a person who could cause damage. I'm going to counseling right now for anger. I'm trying to get to the root of anything that could possibly cause violence, because I don't want to do that. I don't want to hurt somebody else just because I get mad.
Mm-hmm. And hey,
I want a hug.
Quelling, this is Aaron Birch. Aaron, this is Quelling.
Nice to meet you. So that's it. I don't agree with violence as long as it's not needed.
Santa Cruz
this guy here. Excuse me. Didn't you get charged with assault for hitting a cop in the head?
Weren't you charged with hitting a homeless person with a 2x4? Fucking fascist pig you are.
Why do you have to resort to name calling?
Because you're a piece of shit.
No, it's because you don't have something intelligent to say.
No, it's because you're a fucking arrogant Nazi motherfucker
who
doesn't believe in the right of human beings of different colors, of different social situations.
Have you ever talked to me before? Have you ever talked to me before?
Sexualities.
Have you ever talked to me before?
To live in peace and harmony on this planet.
I'll ask you once more. Have you ever talked to me?
No. And I'm not going to talk to you now either.
Because you're ignorant and you choose to be ignorant. See, they call me a bigot, and a bigot is someone who chooses not to learn, chooses not to educate themselves. I seek to educate myself. If you can show me the truth, do it.
I'll do what I can. Becky, this is Aaron Birch. Aaron, Becky Johnson.
Yeah, hi.
Nice to meet you.
Do you have a number you can be reached at?
I'm not going to give out my phone number. We already had some threats.
Or do you have a voicemail that you can be reached
at? I don't have that either. If you can give me a number, I'll gladly call it.
All right. I'll give you a phone number. And that was last Thursday's interview with Aaron Birch, convicted of assault on another homeless person, since we can say that at various times, at least if his account is true, he's been homeless. And of course, haven't done an investigation into his story, and I know that his reputation among people that I know is not good, but then again, I don't know his friends, I know his foes. And so I'm in the position of a person who is trying to determine the truth, and that was the reason for that interview with Aaron Birch. It really it raised a lot of questions in my mind. I was impressed that these two individuals, and I guess maybe I shouldn't have been impressed, but he and his friends, who in essence describe themselves as Nazis of one shade or another. I mean, he doesn't call himself a Nazi. He calls himself a national capitalist, if you will. But he admires the SA and sees pride and love of country in the faces of the Nazi stormtroopers. I've got to admit, I was impressed that this individual would come and talk to hostile crowds. And he seemed to be sincere in his desire to, quote, educate people, which I suppose we might say would be to press on his own particular view of the need for racial separation. And his claim is that he's interested in educating himself. I don't know how accurate that is. Again, it's important to judge people by what they do, and rather than by what you hear about them or by your preconceived perspective on them. I think I'm going to get some dialogue on this issue. Here's an incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
All right.
Hey, I don't know if you covered the part of where we first came in contact with him along the Mumia March when we were...
No, tell me about that.
Well, we were marching for Mumia, I think it was about a week, 2 weeks ago now?
Mm-hmm.
A week ago, wasn't it?
It was a week ago, last Thursday.
Last Thursday, and there was a huge march of about 250 people that marched down Pacific, up Laurel, on Mission, all the way to Highway 9 and River Street, where they meet, and everybody sat down and blocked traffic for a good, I don't know, half an hour or so, 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And while people were doing that, these three individuals and a woman that was just kind of with them but standing aside, one of them was Aaron Birch and two other gentlemen that...
probably Jeff, his colleague. And
yeah, and I don't know the other gentleman's name.
Mm-hmm.
But they came up saying, "Fry Mumia and get the fuck out of the street. What's the matter with you? You're a bunch of idiots," and this and that. And there was dialogue, which I taped part of that,
mm-hmm,
and played last week on my show.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found it interesting. That's, you know, I don't know where they came from or how they got there, if they're just driving by or what, but that's the initial contact we had with them, is that they came up being arrogant and saying "Fry Mumia" and not even looking at our cause when they would like us to look at our cause, or look at their cause, excuse me.
Yeah.
And just that little interaction with Steve Argue there was kind of interesting in a way.
Steve Argue, of course, for those who don't know, is the last voice at the end who in essence said he didn't want to talk to fucking Nazi because he wasn't going to engage in that discussion.
Right.
Probably because he felt their ideology was so odious.
Right. Well, I don't agree with his point of view, but
Aaron Birch or Steve Argue?
The way Steve, or I don't agree with Aaron Birch's points of view on racism and all that as well, but I still think that maybe Steve took the wrong approach, just calling him a Nazi, and the guy kind of actually opened it up for him. He didn't even want to stop and talk to him for a minute, and I'm kind of glad that you did, and we got to at least find out a little bit more about these people that we were so afraid of, and I think it's interesting.
Well, it is interesting because they kind of mirror a lot of the things that activists on the left say. I mean, first of all, they seem to be they're apparently overcharged by the police initially, held for 40 days in jail. I mean, this sounds familiar, doesn't it? I mean,
right.
It sounds like what they do with other people too. And on Aaron Birch's case, it may have been justified. I suspect it was justified given the accounts I heard from two other witnesses who were present at the beating, one of whom who was beaten, Joe Barker, another man, Ron, who observed the beating. The way that he described it to me, he and two others were sleeping in this, he being this fellow Ron, were sleeping in this kind of back area with permission from the front I was some sort of a, it's either a business or a residence that was in front, and then sort of a shack out back. And then suddenly, they heard some people entered the room shouting, "Police, get up," and began kicking them with boots. And actually, they also had, the claim was they had chains, bottles, and clubs.
Huh.
That was the claim of Ron and also Joe Barker. Both, I talked to Barker 3 months ago. I talked to Ron 5 months ago on this issue. Ron, I don't think was, I didn't record him. And Barker, I think I did. So I had a different perspective. I was trying to give Aaron Birch an opportunity to speak about his own situation, and I wasn't, you know, quite the, I wasn't the prosecutor. I was more kind of, I was trying to be sympathetic in a certain way, give him a chance to give his perspective out there. But it's, he was definitely evasive at certain points. For example, he said there, you know, it sounds like he has a story together. It may be a true story, but it all sounds like a story. And his story conflicts with what I heard, that there were six people involved.
Right.
And, you know, it may be that he just blundered into it. You know, I suppose that's a possibility. But what we heard, you know, we were trying to piece this together months ago, or because there have been more than 25 or 30 assaults on poor and homeless people by my informal reckoning, not even including the last month's assaults on young people, some of whom have been homeless downtown.
Right.
The kind of the Tuesday night assaults, we might call them. They happened like for four Tuesday nights or Monday, Tuesday night. So, I mean, I got to admit, I was impressed with Birch's, his apparent openness, his candor, his courage in standing in a group of people who were clearly hostile to him.
Right.
His cool, his ability to sort of field questions. He also, you know, showed ignorance. I mean, the SA stormtroopers he admires were socialists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted to seize all the department stores, and I mean, they were also Nazis. I mean, they were, you know, they believed in the Führer and all that sort of thing, and then this racist and anti-Semitic garbage, what I regard as garbage. But they also believed in leveling the wealth, and Hitler, of course, destroyed the SA. He had them all. He had, in essence, he had all the leaders shot in 1934.
Right.
So I mean, he doesn't know his history, and it's interesting. I remember an earlier conversation between activist Will Ma, who is a local activist concerned about Mumia, death penalty, other things, talking to Jeff, Aaron Birch's associate, and asking if he'd ever heard of, you know, labor figures like Joe Hill, if he'd ever heard of Sacco and Vanzetti, other people who are, you know, historically very famous union people who have been persecuted, harassed, even murdered by the state. And, you know, the Nazis in Germany had their own heroes of people who were killed by the government at different times or imprisoned. And it's kind of like one wonders where these, you know, where these, I just, where they come from in terms of their knowledge of things. But the similarities, I mean, these are people, these look like poor people from, although I don't know, his family did get together the bail to get him out, so it's not entirely clear.
Well, it was a pretty interesting interview there.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Bob. Maybe you can play your interview, too, at some point, which you already have.
Yeah, well, it wasn't an interview. It was more of the dialogue that went on that I taped between some of the activists and Aaron Birch and his associates.
Gotcha.
And that kind of thing. But not to get off the subject, but I do have a update on the Santa Cruz Five, or at least two of them that were in court this morning.
Sounds good.
If you
Santa
want.
Cruz Five, for those who are interested, are five people arrested the May 22nd protest against the bombing of Yugoslavia. One of them has already been convicted, Steve Argue. He was convicted of punching a police officer in what he describes as a defense of others, a woman who the police officer was, by this very vivid photo that you can see, it was published in the Sentinel and has also been published elsewhere, of this officer, David Lefebvre, twisting the arm of, or the hand of this woman who is trying to hold on to her child, and Argue intervened with a blow to the officer's face, forcing her, you know, I guess, forcing the officer to, you know, turn his attention to Argue, and the woman and the child and the woman got away. So.
It was just a love tap.
I see.
Anyway, I was in court on an unrelated matter, and
Argue was convicted, of course. He's facing sentencing in November, but there are four others who now face trials.
Right.
But not for violent actions, but for simply, sort of blocking the area or...
Not moving fast enough for officers, I guess, when there are other people that were violating the same law. Basically, in court this morning, Took quite a while, till almost noon, for us to finally get there. Judge Kelsey was sitting in for Commissioner Salazar, who very soon is going to be appointed judge, from what I understand.
That's good news.
By the governor. basically, what happened with V-Man, Vinny, there was a little talk there, because Kelsey, I guess the day before, he was put on calendar, and V-Man didn't even know that he was. Kelsey made the point that this was just really stupid, you know, this is a stupid thing, why is he even being charged, this and that. And today they made some type of deal where they're going to reduce it down to a 415, disturbing the peace. And
from a what? What is he charged with now?
Resisting arrest is the charge.
But there's no underlying thing he was arrested for?
No, just resisting arrest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're going to reduce it to a 415. They were going to give him a year's probation and a stay-away order from Pacific Avenue Mall.
Uh-oh.
Which he said, no way, no deal.
Well, Vinny's a reporter as well as...
Yeah.
He works, I guess, a block from the mall, right?
Right, right. So. He has... Bank is on the mall. It's all connected around there. He didn't go for the deal. He said, no way. The DA was Paul Maragonda, his lawyers, Anthony Bowles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to go ahead with a jury trial, and I believe it's going to start on Monday.
That's in Department 2.
Yeah, Department 2.
So 9 o'clock, jury selection should begin there?
Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. I'm not sure. But they kept trying to get him a deal. They had tried at least 3 times.
They being the DA?
The DA and even Judge Kelsey. And Vinny was just like, no deal, sorry. I'm not going to go to jail for this. And so there's only 2 witnesses, basically. Sergeant McMahon is the witness on their side, and then there's like 1 witness on Vinny's side. He didn't go for the deal. I'm pretty much sure he's going to be found not guilty, because he was doing the same things that all these other reporters were doing. He was holding a tape recorder. He was recording what was going on. Channel 42 was out there. Even our producer was out there getting...
I was next to Vinny with a tape recorder, you know, right next to him, and I wasn't arrested.
Right. You know, and so they obviously singled him out and arrested him. And as well as Jim Costner, who was in there today, who's represented himself. And Judge Kelsey said a few choice words about him. He's also looking at a probation violation, and that goes to the DA, whether they want to either charge him either or both, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Probation violation and resisting, obstructing, delaying an officer for May 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Demonstration against the war in Yugoslavia, yeah. That all this happened around.
Now, probation, some people get kind of nervous when you use that word. Probation in Santa Cruz is something that they give you for such a thing as standing up in the courtroom, as Jim did 3 years ago, and saying, this is not justice.
Right.
Which is what he said in the courtroom of, I think it was Judge Kelsey. Maybe it was...
No, it was Judge Barton. I remember I was there. It was for
Randy
DeMars, who was being charged for the...
he was being charged because he stood up for homeless people at a vigil.
Right.
And he was then pepper sprayed brutally by several officers, dragged to the ground.
By hearsay of Stuart Martin, who owns the ID building.
Right. Stuart Martin, the manager of the ID building, was, you know, sort of involved in this. And
notoriously known for attacking homeless people, and even tried to charge me for terrorizing terrorist threats for just singing songs outside his store.
Right. But, well, your songs can be pretty brutal, man.
Oh, yeah. Well,
what can
know.
I say?
Yeah. So that's basically what happened. And then, of course, I was in court for my wonderful riding my bicycle over the San Lorenzo Bridge there that connects the river.
You are a known scofflaw.
Yeah, that's me.
And what happened with that? Did you?
Well, basically, I was the last person in there about 12:30. Well, no, about 1 o'clock. I finally got called up. And I told him not guilty, and he says, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. And first he asked me, he called my name. He says, is there any other names you have? I said, yes, Skidmark Bob. He's all like, well, maybe someday we'll get into where you got that name. But today, what do you want to do? I said, I want not guilty, and I guess I'm going to have to take it to a jury trial, not jury trial, because it's an infraction.
Court trial. Mm-hmm.
But court trial. And he said, I'll tell you what, if you plead guilty, you will not have to pay anything at all, and your sentence was already done, time served in court waiting for this. So he was nice enough to
So you pled guilty to
I pled guilty. Well, I did. I ride over that damn thing every day. And that's exactly what I did when I left the courtroom. I rode over the footbridge.
You're just, you know, there's no stopping you. no one stops Skidmark Bob.
And my son. So, you know, my son is riding.
How old is your son?
Too. He's 4 years old.
He's just riding in your vicious bicycle treads.
Yep. He's,
I don't know what to say, man.
He's had, for a four-year-old child, he's had pretty bad interactions with the local police just from the activist repression. You know, we've observed the police on a couple of occasions, and he's scared of them. And I didn't have anything to do with that. It just happened to be just everyday life, and he's scared of the police. He's scared of their guns, and he should be in a way, you know. But I'm going to educate him as he gets older.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you for the update. Any words on Nassim or Chris Brozda?
I don't know anything about the other people involved. I guess we're going to find out soon enough. They wanted to try to consolidate all the cases, but Kelsey said no, not going to happen.
So that was a victory for the defense.
Right, I guess. I don't know. I don't know that part of it. But.
Well, listen, I thank you for calling, Bob. And,
okay.
If you got any more thoughts, call back.
So show up Monday for Vinny's trial starting
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Department 2. That's at 70701 Ocean Street.
That's right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And also a couple of quick announcements. 7 o'clock, you can also tonight find debate on the box store law. Is it the Coonerty special interest law? Is it a good law that is being finally put into place because of Coonerty's pressure, which might not be something all of us would agree with, but in this case might be considered to be a good thing? This is a law that essentially puts chain stores up for another layer of consideration by the community and the city council. I should say the community through the city council. That's going to be at city council tonight in about 5 minutes if you want to get down there and give up on this show. There's also coming up tonight, Voices from the Village. Actually, before we talk about that, it's Club Cruise. And I understand from Club Cruise producer Becky Johnson that tonight you're going to have a fine show on jury nullification, or jury independence, as some people call it, the right of the jury to make fundamental judgments about the justice of a charge, not just simply rigidly decide the facts and let the judges do the rest. Rather, they can decide whether it is a fair thing for a person to go to jail for whatever they're being charged with, whether it be marijuana, whether it be, if you're in 1850 America, slavery, whether it be criticizing the government. And we actually have so that show is Club Cruise, coming up from 7 to 7.30 on Channel 71, if you're interested in watching. And then at 7.30, there's Voices from the Village, which again has to do with the box stores, the question of regulating these chains that they're trying to come into town. And it's going to be Keith Sugar versus Doug Lay, CEO of the Red Tree Properties, tonight on Voices from the Village. Call-in number is there, 425-4920. But we have a caller calling in, and a man apparently who is bound for glory or jail or both. Both, possibly. That's Vincent Lombardo. You heard him discussed by Skidmark Bob a moment ago. He's facing charges of resisting arrest for an incident on May 22nd. Let's talk to this criminal, shall we? Hey there, Vinny.
Hi, that hasn't been proven yet.
Oh, sure. Well, we know what you're doing. You're just a scumbag. We know that.
Well, listen, I don't know what the whole Bob's conversation was with you. I was a little busy earlier just now watching Dave LeFevre arrest a man, a black man, in fact. He pulled him over and arrested him for DUI. We were watching that, so I didn't hear the...
Was LeFevre's arrest a legitimate one or not?
Are any?
Well, I don't know. Do you believe an individual should be arrested if he is driving while under the influence?
I could go into that another time.
Right. Well, this particular arrest, any comments on it before?
Unfortunately, this particular individual thought that the cops were his friends and thought that if he gave them any information that they would be nice to him. This man was wrong.
Yeah, many people have that misimpression that if you just cooperate fully, everything will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not it's not unusual and unpredictable that people would believe that, because you're dealing with, armed force.
Yes.
You're dealing with,
an occupying army.
You're dealing with individuals who are heavily armed, heavily trained, and who are also, there's a lot of propaganda, making the rounds that these guys are your buddies. And I'm afraid that that's not actually true. I think, though I am civil and even friendly with some police officers, I don't regard them as my friends. I don't think they are.
Ditto.
Right.
So I don't know exactly what Bob discussed about my case in court today.
Case was coming up on Monday, 9 o'clock. Actually, Tony Bowl gave a call as well, not to the studio, your attorney. He wants, I guess, to check me and Becky Johnson out as potential witnesses.
Yes, that's a possibility.
And I guess you're being charged with resisting arrest. For what?
148 PC.
The tape recording the May 22nd protest in back of the van.
Correct.
Where they were holding, by the testimony of the woman who complained about this woman and her boombox, the wrong woman.
Correct.
In the van. It's really quite a... I mean, I it may well have been the right woman for all I know, but the testimony at the argued trial and the letters that went to the court and to the police department said this is the wrong person in the van, and of course the whole brouhaha outside the McPherson Shopping Center came from the fact that the police seized a woman, Go Ling Lau, and refused to tell the crowd or her what they were arresting her for.
Correct.
And, of course, they'll always tell you, well, this is a privacy issue.
Yeah.
But not if the individual wants to know what she or he is being arrested for and wants other people to know, too.
Correct.
So people surrounded the van, and you were, of course, there interviewing people and trying to determine what was going on. And you got hauled away, right?
That's correct. Now I'm facing a jury trial on Monday morning, possibly. Well, this is the update that I wanted to give because I don't think Bob was aware of this. This mm-hmm. is a development that took place this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
My case has been put on master calendar for tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. What this means is that Commissioner Salazar, who is the appointed judge in the case, he's up for a judgeship. And on Tuesday afternoon, he's going to be going up to Sacramento to be interviewed by our esteemed Governor Gray Davis for a position as a judge in Santa Cruz County.
Mm-hmm.
So he's moving up in the world, and he doesn't have time for these little Mickey Mouse cases, these little protesters like me. So he's not going to be there, and he unfortunately won't be able to hear my case, which is good, or I don't know, that's probably bad news for me. But anyway, so I'm going into court tomorrow at 1:30,
mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a hearing to determine who's going to be the judge in the case. There's a number of possibilities we can get thrown into almost any court, and we do have one option to disqualify. And if we get one or two certain judges, we will exercise that option. But
oh boy, I don't envy you your situation there, Vinny.
No, nor do I. So that's what's going on with me.
1:30 tomorrow in Department 2, then, is...
No, in Department 4.
Department 4.
Master calendars in Department 4 at 1:30. And depending on what judge we get... And now I'm going to be on trial sometime next week.
As you should be, you scoundrel.
No, I shouldn't.
No, you should.
No, I shouldn't.
I have to agree with you. So, and for more information, is there a number people can call?
Yeah, you can call the voicemail of Free Radio at 427-4523 if you want to speak with me. Or you can also call the Coalition to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, which is also a contact point for the Santa Cruz Five, which is 425-4467. And I mean, this is a plea for people to please show up once we know Friday where the trial will be. I know it's happening next week, so just stay tuned to Free Radio to find out when my trial will be, and please show up to court and support.
It's a real bad day, you know, because everybody's going up to San Francisco for the Wear Black Against...
Right, well, I'm not worried about Friday, per se, but
yeah.
On Monday or Tuesday when the trial starts, I really would like some support in the courtroom.
And I hope you get it. I personally, of course, will be there taking pictures, or should we say...
No, you might be a potential witness, depending on what...
I'll probably be excluded again from the courtroom, as usual.
Maybe.
They don't like having me in those courtrooms. Well, thank you, Vinny, and
right.
Keep us advised of any further antics by Officer David LaFavre.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
In the terms of the deal, a car is always waiting. Other hands turn the wheel. The door slides open before you. The door slides shut behind. Other hands carry your luggage. Weighty young matters engage your mind. You take the gold out of the earth. You throw the corpses in. One pot is as good as another, as long as the cash is pouring in. The wheels must never stop turning, the machine.
the future has got to be pure and a price to be paid.
Black like the dust, brown like the earth. This is our land, the land of our birth. Silently digging, digging our grave, choking our bodies, choking our lives,
living on scraps, dying in debt, digging in darkness so our children can eat. Once we were brave, waiting the sun, sharing the earth, giving thanks to the poor, sang with the water, sang with the wind, danced with the drum, circled without end.
Now we are silent, they have taken our tongues, they have taken our pride, they have taken our souls, only our bodies, only our eyes, burn with the memory of the old ways.
Brown like the earth, black like the dust, who can we turn to, who can we trust?
You've got no patience with failure, you've got no time for delay. Certainty points for a future, straight lines carve out the way. You never make moral judgment, only one truth will be said. Money must be free to make money, that's all there is in the end. You take the diamonds out of the earth, you throw the corpses in. One drop is as good as another, as long as the cash keeps pouring in. The wheels must never stop turning, the machine must be obeyed. The future has got to be good, and there's a price to be paid.
Round like the earth, black like the dust, who can we turn to, who can we trust? The gun is their gun, they have taken our land. They take what we dig, they take without end.
We drown in the dust, we choke in the heat, asking for a source, our lungs rot. Still we remember the cold fear, waking at dawn with a morning star. Still we remember the sound of the flute, the feel of the grass under our feet. Death may come quickly, if the mine floods, if the rock talks, if the gas explodes.
Mostly we linger on death's cold bed, flushing the air, coughing up blood.
Nobody cares, nobody sees, we make no headlines, dying by degrees.
How to shape weight to attend, the ones who drive your cars, who reserve your place at the table, who murder your daily cigars, who silently guard your privacy, who make sure your time on you, who remind you of your appointments. You know that they all depend on you. You take the uranium out of the earth, you throw the corpses in. One crop is as good as another, as long as the cash keeps pouring in. The wheel must never stop turning, the machine must be obeyed. The future has got to be yours, and there's a price to be paid.
Nobody cares, nobody sees, we make no headlines, dying by degrees. What choice do we have? They have taken our homes, we wait in silence, our time will come.
They tear from the earth, they leave nothing behind, only raw scars on a wasteland. Someday and soon, the mountains will shake, the drum will sound, the sun will turn black, and from out of the dust, and from under the earth, we will arise, proclaiming this truth. All life is sacred, all life is one, from the rocks on the mountains, to the children unborn, and the walls will topple,
and the fences will fall, and the scars will be healed, and the earth will be whole.
This is our land, the land of our birth, black like the dust, brown like the earth.
You never carry money, you like your life ordered and clean. You make out checks for charity, no one can call you mean. Through your double lock gateways, only the privileged pass. And by your taste and arrogance, garments of marble and silver and glass, you take the earth out of the earth, you throw the corpses in. One drop is as good as another, and as long as the cash is pouring in. The world must never stop turning, the machine must be obeyed. The future has already yours, and there's a price to be paid.
And that was Leon Russellson from his album Bringing the News from Nowhere, which I actually have heard played on this station before. The station is, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz, the program, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. This is the October 21st edition, this Thursday evening. A call-in number for those of you who want to join in any of the festivities is 427-3772. Tomorrow, there's going to be a hot time in the old court tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Department 6, Dennis Rehm, that's the homeless van dweller, and may be putting the silver bullet in the court's unconstitutional practice of issuing warrants for failure to pay. That is, say, if you are a homeless person, you agree to do community service and you can't do it, or you agree to pay a fine, then you can't do it or don't do it. The standard practice of our court system is to send out a failure-to-pay warrant by which police can arrest you. Well, that's unconstitutional because it's for an infraction offense. Infractions are not supposed to be arrestable. Does this mean that the homeless can just be scofflaws and not pay their fines? No, but the city attorney has to, in essence, take a civil action to get the money back, which means he has to sue them, which can be done as well if the city attorney really wants to go after homeless sleeping bags and toothbrushes. We'll see if this act actually comes through. It's called the Flory Edwards Jacobs Defense to the Sleeping Ban. I commend it to your attention. 10 a.m., Department 6, that's Danner's Court, tomorrow morning. Check it out. Then, of course, at noon, Loudon Nelson is going to be a caravan against police abuse up to San Francisco, where there will be protests. And at, of course, 1:30, you've heard Vinny Lombardo talk about his reappearance on the master calendar in Department 4. If you're in Santa Cruz and you want to follow that. And then tomorrow night, I am tentatively planning to do some tabling against the sleeping ban, hoping that we can get some volunteers together to get protests going over the crucial Thanksgiving to Christmas month, when the merchants will be most amenable to pressure and persuasion around issues of right of homeless people to have shelter, not to be arrested for sleeping, not to be arrested for having a blanket, not to be fined for engaging in survival activities. So what I'm going to hope to do is hear from all you sleeping ban opponents at 423 HUFF, that's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom's number, 423-4833. And if you want to do some tabling, then we'll go down and do it. But I want to make sure that I'm not going to be out there alone in my bathrobe looking foolish on the streets. I don't mind looking foolish as long as I'm there with a few other people. So if you want to get involved in this, give me a call. We'll do some tabling from 7 to 11. Lots of crowds on the street. It can be fun. 423-4833. Might be able to get some hot soup out there going down. But I want to hear from you before I do it. A couple of stories coming up here. America's oldest bank robber, man 88, charged in a Florida heist. According to the October 19th of Florida newspaper, from Pensacola, an unarmed 88-year-old man robbed a bank only to be caught by customers as he tried to run away with the money, police said. J.L. Hunter Roundtree, a homeless man whose last listed address was a post office box in Bayou La Batra, Alabama, may be the oldest bank robbery suspect in the nation's history. An 82-year-old man was accused of robbing a Colorado bank in 1989. Roundtree is accused of walking into a national bank on Monday and giving a teller a note that said, "Robbery. Give me the hundreds." Clarence Grandison, a customer, said he politely asked Roundtree to stop near the door after hearing someone in the bank say, "We've been robbed." But he said Roundtree, carrying a black bag, continued to walk out and then started running across the parking lot. Grandison gave chase, and his nephew, Eddie Foster, tackled Roundtree. They and another customer held him on the ground until
until police arrived. The amount of money Roundtree allegedly took was not disclosed. Well, got to catch those bank robbers, I must say, and I suppose we should all be grateful for those kinds of public-spirited activities. With me in the studio is Becky Johnson, who has just returned from a meeting of the Homeless Services Center, which is, of course, the group that oversees the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the Community House Program, and the Homeless Community Resource Center, which is where folks have lockers and they get the free meal down out there at River and Highway 1 or Coral Street. I'm particularly interested in what Becky has to say because you may recall in past shows I've talked about Jerry Henry and the harassment that has apparently just escalated beyond belief against him for being a street minister to young people at the Rancho Del Mar Aptos Shopping Center. The merchants at Gottschalk's Rancho Liquors and apparently the coffee roasting company, as well as the sheriff's substation, some of the folks there really want him gone. I wrote this story about Henry for the California Homeless Civil Rights Update, which will be printed in next month's Street Sheet, the newspaper sold on the streets by homeless people in San Francisco. And I hope we have... Do we have Mike? I guess we do. Hello, hello. I'm a little bit concerned that we're losing our mic level. If anybody out there can't hear me, let me know, and I'll try to speak up. Street Minister Jerry Henry is again the target of a merchant sheriff social cleansing campaign at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, just south of Santa Cruz. Henry defends and advises young and homeless people who hang out at the mall. After dropping bogus charges in August, merchants and police have escalated their war to banish Henry from the intentionally abusive to the breathtakingly absurd. On Columbus Day, October 11th, Henry was jailed for trespass to interfere with a business, 602.1, and held on $2,500 bail. 4 days after relatives posted this bail on this groundless charge, Henry was rearrested on the same charge with resisting arrest thrown in for good measure as he peacefully vigiled at the shopping center. This time, bail was set at $25,000. When his relatives and their bail bondsmen arrived at the jail, Judge Robert Yontz raised bail to $100,000 on two charges, which I remind you have a maximum penalty together of $2,000 and 2 years in jail. Henry has never been convicted of anything, is not accused of any violent crimes, and has never missed a court date. Yontz's colleague, presiding Santa Cruz Judge Heather Morse, then colluded with complainant Claudia Esterby, a Gottschalk supervisor, apparently behind much of the vendetta against Henry, by refusing to hear in a timely manner a writ of habeas corpus filed to free Henry from under this outrageous bail. Finally, Morse threw it out for, quote, lack of jurisdiction. That is to say, she threw out the writ and she kept Henry in jail. Morse released her homeless advocate hostage only after he agreed to a banishment order from the Rancho Del Mar until the charges were heard at trial. This order, this banishment order, had been sought for years by Easterby, other merchants, and the police in half a dozen other bogus charges filed against Henry. What they could not get in a public trial, this cabal imposed behind closed doors with their huge bail requirement, $100,000 for a $2,000 charge, which forced Henry to agree to a temporary banishment order rather than spend the next 4 weeks before trial in jail. By the time Henry reached court the next Monday, anti-homeless district attorney Jim Jackson had cooked up a total of 11 misdemeanor charges against Henry, including resisting arrest, public nuisance, and trespass, all of which were designed to punish Henry for his high-profile, nonviolent advocacy on behalf of young people swept up in the merchant's new Young and Homeless Get Out program at Rancho Del Mar, Santa Cruz. Homeless activists may join Aptos Youth in their picket against Gottschalk, which apparently has been going on for several days in a protest. So this was a flyer I wrote, actually a story I wrote, which I turned into a flyer, but I gave it to Becky because I heard she was going out to the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors, because guess who sits on that Board of Directors? And who does sit on that board, Becky?
Well, one of the members is Judge Bob Yontz. He's the head of the Governance Committee, and so he was there tonight as a member of the Board of Directors of the Homeless Services Center.
Mm-hmm. And you apparently, you didn't raise the issue at the meeting, I understand, which I would have loved you to do, about this outrageous $100,000 bail that he put on a man who essentially has committed no violent crimes, and the merchants just want to get rid of him. What did you do? You talked to him afterward?
Well, they had no oral communications period at the meeting, which was unfortunate. I would have been able to raise it before the entire board. As it was, I just passed out the copy of the article that's going to be in the next issue of Street Sheet, a homeless newspaper put out by the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. That'll be, I guess, the November issue.
Did anybody read this at this board? I know how concerned they are about homeless people. They've been letting these assaults go on month after month, including their most distinguished member, Mayor Catherine Sleeping Band Byers, has been part of that board. But so anyway, did any of them read this particular thing?
Well, I was only able to pass it out to them as they were exiting, so no one actually got a chance to read it at that moment, nor did Judge Yance, who I gave a copy to. And when I last saw him, he had one unread copy curled up in his hand.
Like crunched up or curled up?
Rolled up in a tube.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm,
to be read later, I hope.
So you pursued Judge Johnson in order to make sure that he had educated himself properly on this issue, right?
I asked him if he had, if I could ask him some questions about a case that he was recently involved with involving Jerry Henry, where he had posted $100,000 bail.
No, he set $100,000 bail, which nobody could post.
Oh, I see. Yeah, he set bail at $100,000. And I wanted to ask his reasoning for that. And he told me that he understood that there were six separate complainants, people complaining about Jerry. That's what I understood. And then he also said that he was out on OR for two other crimes, so that he thought that the $100,000 was correct, the correct amount.
Interestingly enough, of course, none of these charges, none of this, well, I don't know how many complainants were speaking, but he was not out on OR. He had been bailed out earlier on this earlier charge 4 days before, the same charge, essentially sitting on his car, talking to young people. He had earlier given a petition to the businesses involved, asking them to stop harassing him because they got a stay-away order, so he couldn't go in and get coffee. He felt like he was being treated like a second-class citizen, a nonviolent man who has been disabled, apparently. Disabled in the sense that he is an SSI recipient on disability who is particularly sensitive to these kinds of pressure situations. When he's put into this kind of pressure by police, he can't sleep, he can't eat. And this apparently is the situation he's now in because of this arrest last Friday, actually two arrests, one on Monday and one on Friday.
Well, I asked Judge Yance if he'd gotten his information by seeing a computer screen or whether he'd seen some paper documentation about Henry's case, and he told me that no, he had been called by telephone, that he'd been up on Skyline someplace and been contacted by telephone to get permission for this extremely high bail. And so I, you know, asked him if he found that some of the information that he'd been given, on which he was basing this excessive bail on, if he found out it was incorrect, what would he do about that? And he basically said that, he says, I have to trust the information my employees tell me.
Trust your local police and your local DA, apparently, is the watchword here. Well, let's talk to somebody maybe we can trust. Here's a homeless woman, Patches, previously a squeegee woman, thrown out of the New Leaf parking lot. They don't let her do that anymore. And also thrown out of Taco Bell for apparently taking more than 15 minutes to eat or taking more than 10 minutes to eat. As a customer, apparently they have unusual time requirements for homeless people. Let's hear an update from her. She's spoken about this issue to the Homeless Issues Task Force, which may prove to be as much of a force as it is a farce, to my chagrin. But here's Patches.
We're talking to Patches. It's October 10th, 1999. We're in the quarters parking lot. I guess it's, I don't know what the hell it is, Sherman Boone parking lot now. Hi, Patches.
Hi, Robert.
And Patches, you said that you got a sty in your eye sliced by a doc and didn't do too well without an anesthetic. And
no anesthetic involved, just went in, spliced it. And so I went through a little suffering with that. Wasn't real impressed about the way his bedside manner was. And MLM doctors, I'm really, really disappointed that Dr. Wong isn't there anymore, because she really paid attention to us. So I had two nurses out of the healthcare center at River Street come and find me and let me know I have pneumonia. Now, this is a week later, after they had run the test.
You said you already knew you had pneumonia?
I already knew I had pneumonia.
How did you know?
Because I was throwing up so much phlegm and I couldn't breathe. And so when I went into Emmeline, they ran the test and did my kidney, all the tests they could run. And a week later, they come and run and track me down and tell me I have pneumonia and then told me to hold on.
Hold on. They didn't offer you a warm place to stay?
Not a warm place.
Didn't offer you an antibiotic?
No antibiotic.
Didn't offer you an appointment with a doctor until a week and a half later?
Which would be a week and a half from this coming Monday, and I have pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank goodness for the hot weather.
Thank goodness for that, and thank goodness that I found a safe camping place, but we're paying for that up in Boulder Creek, because there's no safe camping place around Santa Cruz anywhere, unless you pay, and you can't pay for it around here anyway. But if you're out on the street and you're sleeping on concrete, you're going to get sick in this weather. And that's what happened. And it escalated and escalated, and it got to the point that I thought that it was touch and go yesterday, that I was going to have to do a 911, and it scared me. It scared me. I didn't know what to do.
You've been 911 a couple times recently?
When I had the seizure and the heart attack in the parking lot of New Leaf a month and a half ago. And they did real well with me on that, but then just cut me loose and told me, deal with it. So that's basically where it's at. But how can the hospital come and tell you you have pneumonia and then just let you be on the street and not give you any help or any medical advice of what to do and make a doctor's appointment for you at Emmeline a week and a half later and you have pneumonia? I don't understand.
Is this the only element, or was it you were looking for a particular doctor?
Yes, I was. I was looking for Dr. Young. And he doesn't do urgent care. I mean, he does urgent care, but it's on whatever date and date. And
so would they have given you a sooner appointment if you said, get me to any doctor?
Yes, they would have done that.
So why don't you do that since you got pneumonia?
I'm going to do that tomorrow. Tuesday, because tomorrow's a holiday. And I'm going to have to. But there's just certain doctors up there that don't pay attention. I'm 50 years old. It's not like I don't know what's happening with my body. And I tried to explain to him that day that I felt like I was dying, that I couldn't breathe, which I couldn't. I couldn't breathe. I was gasping for air. And they told me, we'll come back. Nothing's wrong with you. And then a week later, they come and have them track me down and tell me I have pneumonia. Well, hello. I knew that.
But at least you don't have dysentery from eating at Taco Bell. I heard that Taco Bell has evicted you for sitting over 15 minutes, even though you were a customer.
Yes, we were eating. I wasn't even finished eating. And my husband and I were sitting there eating, and it was over a 15-minute limit. So they told us that we couldn't come back. We're 86th out of there. And I asked the people there, the manager there, well, are you going to do that to your tourist customers? And he had no reply to that.
What was the name of the manager?
Greg.
And when was this?
2.5 weeks ago.
And were you drunk, abusive, or in any other way about to have a seizure on the floor?
No, not at all. In fact, I clean up the place. The birds eat the food. I clean up the trays. I clean up any trash around there. All that. I've never been. In fact, I've been overly, probably kind. And I'm finding that people don't appreciate that.
Did he say any reason why you were being?
No, we were just over 15 minutes. Couldn't sit there over 15 minutes. And that's why I said I asked him, well, if your tourist was sitting there over 15 minutes eating, because I wasn't finished eating, and you didn't have any reply to it.
Have you heard of anybody else being evicted for this reason?
Yeah, there's been... Yeah, the people that they know that are out here, that are homeless, they will do that too.
And do you know anyone specifically?
Yeah, I do, but I'd rather not go.
How many people would you estimate this has happened to that you know of?
3 or 4.
And is this, are these people unusually, are they eccentric or violent in their habits? Or?
No, in fact, they're older people. We aren't even talking about youngsters that are hanging around and all that. I mean, we've been going there for 5, 6, 7 years, you know, drinking coffee. And you drink your coffee or whatever, and it's never happened before. And it's just this one specific person, Craig. That's
happened. Did you file a complaint with the owner or manager?
No, in fact, I have his name in my backpack. It's Robin something, and I've thought about doing that. But if I do that, then I have repercussions coming from that. If I push things too far, I have to watch my repercussions from those people wanting to go ahead and push the issue.
Well, maybe there'd be a good repercussion if you had an attorney do it for you.
I would be more than willing.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk to this guy who used to be good with civil rights issues and see if he's up for a return appearance. Anything more you want to add, Patches?
I noticed, though, that since I've got on the air a couple times, that police officers around here have been more, there's been 2 police officers that were harassing me that have got all the way up off of me and are more than kind, which makes me very leery.
So your new fame is bringing you tolerance, eh?
And that was Patches talking about the perils of fame on the radio and apparently the perils of being a homeless person at Taco Bell. On the line with us now is a man with a cross to bear, Reverend John Phillips. Hi, John.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for letting me on.
Sure. I saw you downtown today hauling around a cross on wheels. What is this? Is Easter coming early?
Now, what I'm doing, it's called the Rainbow Crosswalk, and I'm going to be carrying a 12-by-6-foot redwood cross with a large rainbow diversity flag flying from the upper raised cross beam from Santa Cruz to San Francisco. And the purpose is to just let everybody know that hate is not a Christian virtue or value, and that Jesus Christ loves everyone, no matter where you fit under the rainbow.
Well, I know that the media were taking pictures of you. Did any of that show up on TV? Or?
Yeah, the interview was on Channel 46. It'll be on again at 10 and 11. We talked a little bit about the homeless problem in Santa Cruz. That was all cut out, unfortunately.
Great.
It's a pretty brief presentation of what I'm doing, but it didn't really cover it. You know, fair amounts were taken out, but that always happens.
And you're planning to walk up to San Francisco with this cross?
Yeah, I'm going to be leaving Santa Cruz on November 20th at Grant Street Park, which is near Ocean and One up there, and walking from there to, through the East Bay up to San Francisco. And I'll be speaking at about 5 churches along the way. And just trying to share the good news that Jesus loves everybody.
Well, I think that a little love is a good thing. A little justice would be an even better thing, or at least
that's
as good a thing.
If you have love, I think you sort of automatically have justice. It's hard to love somebody and still kick them out of Taco Bell for taking more than 15 minutes to eat their dinner.
Yeah, actually, love is probably better than justice. But if you can't get love, at least we want to get justice.
Absolutely.
That's what, as we used to say to the Southern segregationists, you don't have to love them, just serve them food, man. I mean, treat them like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So you also mentioned you had some concerns about a recent murder.
Yeah, last night up in San Francisco, up in Sacramento, Reverend Ed Sheriff with the Universal Fellowship of Metropolitan Community Churches was murdered. He has been a very active member of the UFMCC, which is a predominantly gay and lesbian, bi and trans denomination, for quite some time. The information I've gotten so far was a little bit sketchy, but apparently some people broke into his house and stabbed him in the chest and killed him for being gay.
Wow.
So we were just downtown at the clock tower having a little vigil and trying to, you know, let people as they go by know about it. Yeah, the increase in hate crimes, whether you're talking hate crimes to the homeless, hate crimes to gays and lesbians, hate crimes to Jewish people, I mean, across the board, it's just times are getting scary. There's more and more hatred going on.
Well, yeah, that's actually, we have also in the studio with us Becky Johnson, who attended the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors meeting, which had, you know, such notables as Judge $100,000 Bail Yance, who delights in locking up homeless activists, and Mayor Sleeping Van Byers, who gives them $54 tickets for falling asleep at night in Santa Cruz, and, of course, Sergeant Lauren Baker, who I guess he complained that he spent 157 hours trying to track down 175 hours to track down a shooting. You know, Becky didn't quite finish her report. Maybe she can kind of talk a little bit about that. Can you hear us on there?
I can hear you.
Why don't I put her on the phone to do a little conversation with you? She can kind of give you how hate crimes are being dealt with in Santa Cruz, at least according to the Homeless Services Center, you know, which is being paid to provide services to homeless people.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Reverend John.
Hi, Becky. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I was at this. I was at this meeting, and we did have some of the notables that Robert mentioned, as well as more that weren't mentioned. But Ken Cole, who's the executive director of the Homeless Services Center, did bring up the issue of what we call troll busting, assaults on homeless people, and that have been seem to be on the upswing since last January. And so Sergeant Lauren Baker gave a report. He said that he'd spent 175 hours researching a shooting that may or may not have happened, trying to find the alleged person who was there and hearing different reports. And finally he concluded that there really had been no shooting, and that, or that if there had been, it had happened years ago. Sounded kind of useless. He did report that one of the men who had been arrested previously in an incident on Chestnut Street, which made the papers, where some people in a car were taunted, and they were people of color. And that one of these people, I guess the city had dropped charges on them, or maybe the DA dropped the charges. Well, that this one man had been rearrested. And Baker reported that he was concerned that the DA did not mark it as a hate crime. He thought that it should have been classified as a hate crime. But so far, there have been none of these assaults have, or any of the arrests that have occurred. There have been very few arrests, only four that I know of. One has resulted in a conviction for assault, which is the lowest level of crime. Also, again, not with the hate crime designation. But none of these have been charged as hate crimes, or, you know, classified as hate crimes.
It's really difficult. I had a man at the vigil we did at 6 to 7 at the clock tower who was trying to convince me that Matthew Shepard was not a matter of hate crime. And it's like,
I think there's a lot of denial going on, and local denial. People don't want to believe that it's happening here in our community. And especially in Santa Cruz, it's difficult because we consider ourselves so liberal and progressive and here. And it's just kind of hard to face that there is much of that goes on. Or the biggest blackout we find are hate crimes against the homeless. They just somehow don't seem to make the papers, or the police don't seem as concerned about seeking out and arresting those individuals. The DA seems uninclined to prosecute.
Unfortunately, that's very true. Very true. It's the people who are the social outcasts and throwaways, you know, in quotes, society just seems to ignore. As the follower of a homeless Jewish carpenter, I personally take major offense to that.
Yeah, it does seem like all categories. Of course, we've always found that youth have been discriminated against in throughout history, I would guess. Santa Cruz is certainly not different in that way. I'm referring to how the youth are treated by people in authority, say merchants or the police. There seems to be a suspicion of youth as just any kind of a suspect class.
Very true. Very true.
So what kind of comments did you have today when you were carting your cross?
All right, a lot of really great comments, a lot of support. You always have a few people who want to tell you that you're an abomination to God or some such nonsense. But for the most part, it's been very positive as we've been walking along. Had an interesting experience with a group of skinheads. There were probably about 15 skinheads who were sort of blocking the sidewalk. And they were expecting me to go around, but I just sort of kept going into the middle of them, and then they sort of blocked the cross. And one of them pointed at the rainbow flag and made some kind of derogatory comment. And I just asked him, I said, well, do you think society likes skinheads? And he said, well, no. And I said, does society like gay people? And he said, no. And I said, well, aren't you glad God loves skinheads and gay people? And he was sort of floored. I'm really totally with you guys with the homeless issues and all these issues. And to me, the fundamental issue of all of it is that we need love, and we don't have it as a society. Like Robert was saying earlier, if you can't have love, at least have justice. But
if we loved our homeless people, we would be caring for them better.
Absolutely. Think about if your son or your daughter or your brother or your sister were homeless and you were a caring person and you had the wealth of a city behind you, what would you do? Would you not only just let them be out in the cold and shivering and stuff, but even more than that, would you then go and steal their blankets or beat them up in the bushes and then if they try and say something like, this isn't right, then you're going to arrest them or you're going to give them these outrageous fines? I think we've lost some really critical key values. Yeah, and that's love and justice.
Well, Reverend John, thanks. Thanks for calling in and giving us this update.
Absolutely. I would like to add that if people out there feel like they're not welcome in churches, they're welcome at our church. We meet at Loud Nelson Center at 6:30 in the evening on Saturday evenings, and everybody is welcome there.
All right. Thank you.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And this is... last 15 minutes of Bathrobs Piers Broadsides. A couple of articles I want to read you, and actually I had a lot of tape I wanted to play, but the time just zips away. Of course, Becky had some other things she uncovered at the Homeless Services Center, like no action at all on troll busting, no proposals for a safe zone, no proposals to end the sleeping ban, no proposals even for increased shelter. Shouldn't be a surprise to those of us who are watching the situation, but... It should to those who have reasonable expectations about what this homeless services center should do. I'm going to move on to the next thing, unless Becky has something she wants to add. Anything? Did you pretty much cover it, Becky?
I did discover one thing that didn't have to do with the homeless services center. It had to do with the Board of Supervisors and their lack of having what's called a housing element as part of their general plan. And one of the things that came out of this hearing is that the county, by not having this housing element, may have lost as much as $10 million in the last 4 years of state funding that could have gone to build affordable housing. And remarkably, the Board of Supervisors voted 3-2 not add a housing element at this time. That means it'll postpone it for another 2 years of lacking funding that Santa Cruz County could be getting if we had chosen a different course.
That's housing for the rich, of course, and not for the rest of us. There was an interesting discussion at the City Council on Tuesday night, but I'm not going to be able to get into that now. Hopefully we'll have Scott Graham or possibly some other worthy talking about that, as it looks like they're pushing forward with Dolphin Lee in the Beach Flats, so they're not being too candid about it, and we'll talk more about that. That's the program that would evict several hundred Hispanics, actually people who were supporters of the new City Council and opponents of last year's Canfield boondoggle, the Beach Boardwalk boondoggle that was going to Third Street realignment and so forth. Interesting article in On the Internet, Cities Take Hard Line on Homeless by Blair Anthony Robertson and Matthew Barrows from, I think it was from Sacramento. I'll read a little bit of that for you until I run out of time here. Sacramento's hardcore homeless, for years a fixture on city streets, are being corralled into another kind of temporary housing with three square meals a day, county jail. After a decade of putting money into shelters and outreach programs, Sacramento has signed on a nationwide trend that has seen cities replace welcome mats with laws aimed at reclaiming urban centers for businesses, shoppers, and tourists. They're trying to push us further and further away from the general public because we're not good for business, said Sharon Pusetti, 47, who sleeps in a makeshift encampment in the woods along the American River. No argument there. From Sacramento to New York and Marysville to Miami, the newer, harsher approach is cracking down on everything from sleeping in parks to body odor in public libraries. Critics insist it is merely an attempt to force the homeless out of town altogether. I've been arrested 5 times, said Bill McManus, 45, who has been homeless in Sacramento for most of the last 7 years. He says he's received more than a dozen tickets for illegal camping and wound up in jail when the unpaid citations turned into warrants. Exactly, of course, what's happening in Santa Cruz, sleeping ban buyers notwithstanding. Authorities say homeless like McManus are precisely their targets, stubborn and persistent people seemingly unwilling to accept help or help themselves. Of course, this whole article is full of a really clear anti-homeless bias, which also distorts the facts about the services that are actually available in Sacramento, about which we could do another show on. But let's read on, because it's of interest anyway. In a clear sign that they have lost patience, or that they're succumbing to merchant pressure, is how I would put it, local governments nationwide have teamed with business partnerships and law enforcement agencies to transform the way they deal with vagrants. Actually, it's the same old story, only more of the same old story. Revamped benches with armrests in the middle that encourage sitting, not sleeping, have been installed. And, of course, if you look up and down the Santa Cruz Mall, you'll see these little pieces of green metal railing on top of the square cement boxes that people used to sit on. Now they can't. Thank you, Neil Coonerty and Jim Lang and the City Council for making these anti-homeless pieces of architecture. In many towns, benches have been removed altogether. In Santa Cruz, they remove benches from around the Cat and Canary, and if you look up and down the mall, you don't see too many benches, much less than there were 5 years ago. Iron fences with passcodes have been erected around once-overrun parks. Again, parks that are used in desperation are called overrun. This is what we call newspeak. It's a kind of a sinister new terminology that strikes me as being kind of fascistic, that is to say, concerned with justifying police state measures against poor people, which is, of course, what the Nazis did. Their first targets were beggars and what they called surplus mouths. Again, continuing the story from the Sacramento Bee. Social service workers offer one-way bus tickets to transport vagrants to a relative's home. Iron fences with passcodes have been erected around once-overrun parks, including Sacramento's renovated Muir Park at 16th and C Streets. Marysville installed parking-type meters that allow pedestrians to deposit coins for charity rather than deal with beggars, that is to say, to hand them money. Sacramento and several other cities throughout the country are following suit. Dozens of cities have outlawed aggressive panhandling. Marysville, among other towns, passed laws prohibiting shopping carts on the street and, quote, dumpster diving. That's the subject that came up at the Homeless Issues Task Force recently. The question of whether, how can we look ourselves in the mirror when our city is arresting homeless people for engaging in recycling activities. That's what they're doing, scavenging tickets. Even if you want homeless people to get your scavenging, your cans, your bottles, your plastic, your cardboard, even if you tell them, go get it, if they take it out of those blue containers, that's criminal behavior. A woman named Verna talked about that issue at the last Homeless Issues Task Force meeting, which is every second Monday for those who are interested. If you're interested in that, by the way, give a call to 423-HUFF, and I'll give you more information about that. Continuing this article, On Friday, San Francisco police announced they would begin seizing shopping carts held by the homeless and dumping the contents into plastic bags. What this article doesn't say is that protests from homeless people, from ordinary people, and from the community generally forced Mayor Brown to completely abandon this ridiculous idea. This is really kind of a form of criminalizing people for using shopping carts that are, in essence, abandoned. It's not like they're running in and stealing shopping carts, and they're using shopping carts to very good purpose. Survival for themselves, and in many cases, recycling. But you wouldn't know that by reading this article. Grocery stores are investing in radio-activated wheel locks on shopping carts to curb theft. They already employ companies that recover carts, which cost up to $150 each, and are the storage bins of choice for the homeless. Urban liquor stores keep black books and refuse to sell to drunk wagon repeats. But do they also refuse to sell to alcoholics who have a nice little room where they can destroy their liver? Probably not. In city after city, police have been given new marching orders to enforce once-overlooked laws that address vagrancy. It's not that they're overlooked. They were declared unconstitutional. When that doesn't work, new laws are passed. The most common new laws address panhandling, camping, and loitering. Morristown, New Jersey, and Iowa City, Iowa, among others, cracked down on smelly patrons in libraries. Did they put in showers, I ask? I don't know. Smelly patrons in libraries. Years of programs designed to get the homeless off the streets, officials say, have failed. In 10 years, Sacramento County's spending on homeless programs increased from $1.6 million a year to $14 million. What's not mentioned, of course, is how much has the homeless population in Sacramento increased? The discouraging result, more homeless are on the streets, and shelters have regular vacancies. What's more, other towns bus their homeless to Sacramento to take advantage of the services. I think people are exhausted by it. They are really tired by the constancy of it, said Sacramento Councilwoman Heather Fargo, who concedes her own attitude toward the homeless has changed with time. While many applaud the efforts, homeless advocates say authorities are going to extremes, coming down hard on those who have hit rock bottom, not only shooing homeless away from storefronts, but trekking deep into the woods to close illegal camps. In some cases, critics say this approach criminalizes homelessness. It's the most god-awful waste of money using jail as a substitute for modest housing, said Leroy Chatfield, executive director of Loaves and Fishes, a nonprofit homeless advocacy agency. In recent weeks, authorities have conducted sweeps in Sacramento along the American River Parkway, where hundreds of homeless like Puccetti make camp. But they're not giving warnings or citations any longer. That policy has changed, said Kara Weston, an executive lieutenant with the Sacramento Police Department. We're now at the point where we are arresting people for camping. We're hoping that taking them to jail is going to push them to get housing. These are brilliant minds in operation. The approach was approved by the 33-member Sacramento County and City's Board on Homelessness, which includes law enforcement, community and business leaders, and homeless advocates. While some homeless say the new policy is frightening and mean, others admit it has inspired them to find a stable home. Well, of course, you remember Robert Steffen's approach to getting a stable home when he couldn't get into the ISSP program was, of course, to get arrested on the porch of the Homeless Services Center and get 90 days lodging in jail here in Santa Cruz. The sweeps are the fourth phase in an approach that began by surveying the homeless population and offering solutions, including one-way bus tickets. It's really hard for me to deal with this, and I may not have to any longer because it looks like Uncle Dennis and his guest, or possibly his co-host, have arrived. In the heavily wooded area near the river, a web of trails leads to dozens of camps. About five people at each encampment divide duties. Some collect water, others get cigarettes, food, or money. A recent visit found the trail overrun with litter, from used toilet paper to food wrappers, old clothes, even tires, all within a short hike of Camp Pollock, the Boy Scout facility. This is what we call kind of terroristic propaganda against homeless people, and I will be giving you more of this exciting stuff next show, which is going to be Sunday from 11 to 1:30 for those of you who've had the stomach to listen to this. A couple of quick announcements. Saturday, Land Trust is having a second meeting at 2 p.m. at the Loud Nelson Center. Then from 9 to midnight, tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz to hear John Malkin interviewing a nonviolence expert. John has infinite patience, and I'm glad he does. I'm Also going to be covering, oh yes, my producer points out to me, October 22nd, in case you've forgotten, is Stop Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation Day. If you can get all that out. You wear black. That's the key. Wear black and talk back. And if you see police abuse, stop and say, no, no, it's not nice. Stop that right now. And bring a crowd over to agree with you and to challenge that kind of misconduct. We're going to go out on a favorite of mine from Peter, Paul, and Mary from the mid-'80s, No Easy Walk to Freedom. I remind you, if you want to do any tabling to against the sleeping ban, if you want that tabling to even happen, give me a call at 423-4833 for a 7 to 11 o'clock extravaganza tomorrow night. Let's see who wants to do it. Maybe we'll get out there and continue this process of making the city own up to its responsibilities and preparing for massive protests from November through December. This has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides here at 96.3 FM. Coming up is Uncle Dennis with the infamous and much beloved Earth First.